Osho Talk, Yaku-san, Straight to the Point of Enlightenment, Number 3.
In the days when Yaku-san was still actively instructing his disciples, Riko, the governor of Hoshu, and also a great Confucian, went to visit Yaku-san, whom he greatly admired. Yaku-san was looking at a sutra when the attendant monk showed Riko into the master's room. Yaku-san did not look up on the governor's arrival, but appeared absorbed in what he was reading. After a few moments, Riko, who had a hot temper, could not stand it any more. He grumbled, "It's better to hear the name than to see your face," and stood up to leave. Immediately, Yaku-san said, "Why do you respect the ear and look down on the eye?" Riko pressed his hands together and bowed down. He then asked, "Could you please tell me what Tao is?" Yaku-san immediately pointed up and then down with his hand and asked, "Do you understand?" Riko said, "I don't understand." Yaku-san shouted, "Clouds are in the sky. Water is in the well." Riko suddenly realized and felt great joy. And with his contentment, he bowed down to Yaku-san and presented this poem to him. "Achieved form, it looks like a form of the crane. Under the thousands of pine trees, the way of the two poles. I come and ask Tao, no wasteful argument. Clouds are in the sky, water is in the well."
Friends, the two greatest enemies of man and life are religions and military. They have both the same orientation, life negation. Religions teach people to renounce life. It is a sin to rejoice in it. In an indirect way, they are teaching people to be life destructive. And they are enhancing a consolation that after the life, after the death, you will have all the pleasures of paradise. The military is also life negative. Its whole function is to prepare for death. You can see the relationship. The military prepares to destroy people, and the religion consoles them, "Don't be worried. The real life begins after death." Hence, they have a subtle conspiration which is not so obvious to the ordinary people. Religions have done, all the religions are included their best to destroy people's love, their life, their laughter. They have poisoned everything on the planet. If you are miserable, it is not your fault. You are programmed by the religions to be miserable. If you are criminals, suicidal, murderous, rapists, you are not responsible at all. You have been programmed for all these things to do. But in such a way that unless you have the vision of a Buddha, you will not be able to figure it out. For example, to make man forcibly monogamous is to destroy his whole joy of being with women, women's joy of being with men. A husband soon becomes a commodity. A wife soon becomes a lifelong purchased prostitute. You use each other. And to use any human being is against the dignity of humanity. You can use things, but you cannot use human beings. And what husbands are doing, and what wives are doing, and who is responsible for this? Who has created the prostitutes to save the marriage? Millions of women live in the ugliest manner by selling their bodies. It is the religion. Who has taken away your laughter, your smiling faces? Who has made you look so sad, in such a despair and misery and anguish? Sigmund Freud was right when he said that religion has been teaching against sex. He could not manage people to be against sex, but he has succeeded at least to poison sex. While making love, you feel guilty. And how can you rejoice when you feel guilty? If you are committing a sin, you cannot rejoice unless love is a virtue. Your birthright, it is poisoned. Just as Sigmund Freud is right, so is Karl Marx when he said that religions are the opium of the people. They keep people drugged, drugged in fictions, in God, in heaven, in the greed of paradise and its pleasures, in the fear and paranoia of the hell. I have just received today all the literature from the American Atheist Society, they have suffered immensely, you will not believe. Just as our commune suffered in America, behind the government was the Christian Church. The woman who founded the Atheist Society has been jailed for 19 times without any reason. An American Constitution gives the freedom to choose your religion or not to choose. It is your personal affair. A state cannot interfere in it. Her house has been burned down by American government agencies, CIA. Her whole library has been destroyed. She has been beaten for no reason at all. She had to escape to Hawaii just to save her life. Slowly, slowly, more and more atheists started gathering, and finally they founded the Atheist Society of America. In their literature, they mention my name also. They quote me as calling Jesus a nutcase. So the first thing I would like to tell to the Atheist Society, that to be an atheist is not the right thing. You are simply a shadow of theism. If theism disappears, the shadow will disappear. Never be a shadow. Be on your own feet. Atheists cannot stand on their own feet. If all theisms, all religions disappear, what will be the reason for atheism to exist? Atheism is simply a reaction against theism. I would suggest them to change their name of the society. Atheism indirectly emphasizes God by denying Him. If there is no God, there is no point of denial. You don't deny things which don't exist, do you? Even to deny a thing, it has to be in existence. Even denial is an indirect way of approval. I have watched theists and atheists, and the strangest phenomenon is theists are really concerned about God. Amrito from Greece is here. Because the Greek Orthodox Church was threatening me, I was only for 4 weeks on a tourist visa, and I had never left my beautiful house where I was staying, just on the side of the ocean, And people from all over Europe has come to be with me. The Orthodox Church is started threatening me and the government if they don't send me away out of Greece immediately. He will burn down the house where I am living and my friends are staying. He will dynamite the house. This is from the Archbishop of the Orthodox Greek Church. The reason? I am corrupting the morality of the Greek youth. And there was no Greek youth. My people who were there had come from all over Europe. Perhaps half a dozen Greek sannyasins were there whom I have already corrupted. But he made such a fuss that the Prime Minister has to immediately arrest me. And ordered me that I should leave the country without staying for a single moment. And now the Prime Minister himself is having a girlfriend. His old wife is there, he has not divorced her. And he is moving publicly with his girlfriend. The distance of age is too much. He is going even to the parliament with his girlfriend. The French president has refused an invitation by the University of Athens to give him an honorary doctorate. He refused that I will not come. Because of your precedent, other countries, Soviet Union has refused to have anything to do with Greece unless this man divorces the wife. But there are problems. The Orthodox Church of Greece does not allow divorce. And he is afraid. And what happened to the Archbishop Amrito? When you go back, ask him what happened to his morality. Why he is silent? Why not dynamite the president's house? He is an absolutely the right person to be dynamited. What more corruption you want? What do you mean by morality? Now the Archbishop is completely silent. There is no God, hence there is no need of any atheism. You cannot deny something which does not exist. So my suggestion to the Atheist Society of America is, call your society Agnostic Society of America. Agnostic means one who is searching the truth. He is on the way. He is a seeker. He is not a believer. He does not believe in theism. He does not believe in atheism, because both are believers and both are wrong. All believers are ignorant. In what they believe does not matter. You believe in God, somebody believes in no God. And as I was saying, I asked Amrito, when I was in Greece, how many people belong to the Orthodox Church? She said, almost 90%. And I said, how many people attend the church every Sunday? She said, not more than 4%. And who are these 4% people who attend? Old, almost dead women. One foot in the grave and one foot in the church. This Archbishop of Greece wanted to have a procession against me before my house. But he could not manage because his whole congregation consisted of 6 old ladies. It would have looked so embarrassing. And idiotic. I have never heard any theist talking about God. But atheists are continuously talking about there is no God. This too much concern about God is dangerous. You are more concerned than the theist. Your whole literature consists of denying, continuously denying. Only one sentence is enough. Whom you are denying? There has never been any God. There is no reason for anybody to be an atheist. But to be an agnostic is a totally different world. The agnostic does not believe either in God or no God. He simply does not believe. He searches. He explores. He tries to find the truth. And unless he finds, he will remain simply non-committal. He will not believe in any system of thought. And when he has found, there is no question of believing. He knows it. He knows the truth. Only people who do not know believe. Those who know simply know. There is no question of believing. Do you believe in the sun? Do you believe in the moon? You simply know there is no question of believing. My suggestion to the Atheist Society of America and other atheists of the world is simply to change their name and their attitude. Don't fight against fictions. You are wasting your life. Few people are wasting their life in worshipping fictions. Few people are wasting their life in fighting against fictions. Both are in the same boat. Both are idiotic. Both are nutcases. The sinner man searches, tries to find a way how to approach first his own being and then from that point to enter into the cosmos. Knowing the truth brings great joy and blissfulness and ecstasy. And I have never seen any theist happy, I have never seen any atheist happy. Both are two polarities of the same thing. One has taken the positive attitude, another has taken the negative attitude, but the object of both is the same God, the greatest lie in the world. On the one side is religion, which is death-oriented. And it has immense power which you are not aware. Just in America, Christianity has more land than the biggest 5 corporations which are almost empires in themselves. 5 biggest corporations of America has not the same money nor the same land as the Christian Church. And the American government, against its own constitution, protects Christianity. You cannot find out how much money it has got. Nobody can have any exploration or research into the matter. Government protects secrecy, but still few things leak out. Every year, in different ways, the American government goes on giving to the Christian Church $100 billion. And the Constitution of America says that the state and religion should be separate. The church, not only the Christian, but all the churches of the world belonging to different religions have more power than any government, more money, more people supporting them. But their work is absolutely underground. You don't see it on the surface. And all these churches make death precious and life trivial. Life is something to be renounced. Then what remains? Only death. All the religions make death precious because beyond death opens the doors of paradise. All fictions. And the whole humanity is being forced to live under these fictions. The second enemy is the military. It prepares especially for death. It has no other function. It prepares for war and destruction. And how much money is spent on it? Just in America, Ronald Reagan spent $2 trillion on military build-up. $2 trillion? $1,000 million make $1 billion. $1,000 billion make $1 trillion. $1 million are equal to 15 crore rupees. Proposed military budget for this year is $300 billion. Churches own $102 billion in land. Government subsidizes the church with at least $100 billion a year. This is only about America. The similar is the case in every country. While the people are dying of starvation, and these churches talk about charity, and they are accumulating billions and trillions of dollars. President George Bush was very much angry with me because of my Rolls Royces. But my 93 Rolls Royces cost only $1 million. And I was not the owner of them. They belong to different people who have donated to a trust. George Bush, I have come to know from very intimate friends of the White House, was very much against me. Again and again he was criticizing me, the world is poor, and why this man has 93 Rolls Royces. And as he became president, a special Lincoln Continental limousine has been made for him. It took 3 years to make it, and $600,000, and he forgot all about what he was talking about. I want to remind him that you have still a second rate car. My sannyasin Avirbhava has a Rolls Royce here for me. It is the greatest Rolls Royce that has ever been made by the Rolls Royce company. George Bush is going to spend $30 million on his reception as a president. And this same fellow was talking about my Rolls Royces. And they were not mine. I don't own anything. I have enough friends around the world to take care of me. I had allowed my friends to make that trust for those 93 Rolls-Royces. Even the president of Rolls-Royce company has come to see, because I was their greatest customer in the whole history. Never before, never after. Nobody is going to have 93 Rolls-Royces. What was the purpose of it? Because I used only one Rolls-Royce. I had never gone to see the garage which the Rolls-Royce president has gone to see, and he could not believe his eyes that my cars are kept in such a condition that his new cars cannot compete. Because they were given out of love and taken care out of love. I had never gone. I have been always telling the director of my garage, Aves and Anandas, that sometime I will come. It was not far away. It was just near the gate of my house. I used to pass by its side every day, coming and going twice, but I never went in. It was not my interest. My interest was something else, to provoke the jealousy of the American so-called rich. And I succeeded absolutely. Even the president was jealous, the vice president was jealous, the super rich Rockefeller and others were feeling defeated. For the first time, somebody has made them appear poor. That was the purpose. Otherwise, what is the use? I cannot ride on two Rolls-Royces simultaneously. They were of the same model. They all looked the same from the inside. And I was not sitting on the bonnet. In America, 3 million people are dying with cold and hunger, and President George Bush is spending $30 million just for his reception. Jimmy Carter maintained his reception in only $3 million. If Jimmy Carter can maintain $3 million, that too was too much. Then why George Bush cannot manage? And has he forgotten all about me? Now it is my turn to hit him as hard as I can. He is a coward. He has chosen a vice president, Quayle, who is an idiot. The whole America is talking about only one thing: why an idiot has been chosen as a vice president. Only George Bush and I know the reason. The reason is, Quayle has been chosen as vice president as a safety measure. Nobody can suit George Bush Because they will be afraid, then quail will become the president. This is their strategy. Nobody would like quail to be the president. But this shows the cowardice of George Bush. It is traditional in America that any intelligent president has to be shot down. George Bush need not be afraid. He is not that intelligent. A Lincoln has to be shot down. A Kennedy has to be shot down. 20% of the American presidents have been shot down, and they were the most intelligent ones. The idiots? Who cares? Why waste your bullet? But cowards are cowards. America goes on pretending that it is the same great and super-rich nation. It is no more. You will not believe it has started borrowing money from poor countries. And of course, from rich countries, richer than America. Japan is now the richest country in the world. The richest man in America has only $4 billion. The richest man in Japan has $26 billion. Japan is 1/4 of America as land is concerned. But its land and all that land contains is 4 times costly than America. America is already sliding back. It should be counted soon in a backward country. These receptions, wasting $30 million of the taxpayers, are just to boost the idea in the world that America is still rich. It is no more. And it is going down the drain every day. Ronald Reagan has left it in debt. Now the military is asking $1.5 trillion, otherwise you will not be a competent to Soviet Union. George Bush is at a loss from where to get $1.5 trillion. And the military goes on increasing its budget, and although it has the greatest budget in the world, but it is far behind than the Soviet Union. The reason? Wasted interest. Soviet Union is absolutely computerized. Its missiles will be handled by the computers. American missiles will be handled by human beings. A computer can work for 1,000 people, 10,000 people, as many as you want. Now these people are not allowing the government to put the computers, because then they will lose their job. But missiles handled by human beings cannot compete with missiles handled by computers. America is already a second-rate power in comparison to Soviet Union. And it goes on pretending that it will not only fight for itself, it will protect European continent, it will protect Panama, it will protect Mexico, this and that. All the world, which is not communist, America is going to protect. That is its promise. It cannot do it. It has not the capacity. If Soviet Union attacks Europe, it will take 10 days for America to bring it missiles to Soviet Union or to Europe. It has missiles, but it has not the carriers, so it will have to use old kind of ships to bring it missiles to Europe. It will take 10 days. In 10 days, the whole Europe will be gone. Those ships will search for Europe, and Europe will not be found. But the military experts in America go on continuously bringing bigger and bigger budgets. Their experts' idea is to keep the world in peace, you have to go on increasing military powers, more nuclear weapons, pile up. Whether you will need them ever or not, that is not the question. Soviet Union is cutting its nuclear weapons, but America does not believe. Soviet Union has invited news media people to see with their own eyes, and news people were immensely impressed with the honest desire of Soviet Union to avoid a Third World War. Even American news media was absolutely convinced that whatever Soviet Union is saying, it is doing it. But the American military experts cannot believe it. It is their vested interest, how they can believe it. To believe it means to cut the budgets. And they have been exploiting so much money. They have become accustomed of having immense money in their hands. And it is not made publicly known. The public is being told that it is a secret, military secret. And it is public money and military secret. The American taxpayer is exploited the most in the whole world, and deceived the most. My understanding is Just the other day, I have told the Indian Prime Minister, Mr. Rajiv Gandhi, that if you say to an international gathering that there should not be any boundaries to nations, no organized religions, no differences in colors or races, the whole earth is one. And I have given him the telegram that whatever you are preaching, practice it. And I know he cannot practice it because of the military. The military is not going to take his orders for dispersion. On the contrary, the military will take his power in their hands. Rather than going to the fields and to the orchards and to work, the military is spoiled completely. Without any work, they are getting the best food, the best clothes, the best houses. Why they should leave all this? Rajiv Gandhi cannot do it. He will be thrown out of power by the military. The military cannot tolerate such things. You can talk about, that's good. But don't try to do anything. Every nation is in the grips of military and the religion. Neither the religion would like to be dispersed. Because what will happen to its millions of acres of land, billions and trillions of dollars? No religion is going to disperse. No white man is going to accept the Negro as his equal. Although there is nothing special about being white. The actual truth is, when God was making human beings, first He cooked too much. That's why the Negroes are so blessed. Seeing the Negroes, he became afraid. Out of fear, he half cooked. That's how white people are. Half cooked people. Then he remained in the middle. That's how Indians are. Neither white nor black. Perfectly cooked. But there is no need to feel any superiority or inferiority. You can see it on every beach in America and Europe. What God has left half cooked, people are cooking themselves. It is such a hilarious scene. Thousands and thousands of people, particularly women, lying almost naked, burning themselves, completing the job that God has left undone. I don't like the people, when I see their faces sunburned, it looks ugly. But it is loved very much by the white people. I cannot conceive whether they have any sense of beauty, any aesthetics. If you are half cooked, be happy. There is no harm in it. Why torture yourself? All the beaches have become torture places where people are burning and torturing themselves. And that torture won't last. Within 2-3 weeks, 4 weeks, it will disappear. Again go to the beach and fat woman. You cannot figure out where is their mouth, where are other things. Everything is scattered on the beach. Clothes keep you tight. If everybody becomes loose, it is an ugly scene. They say, these religious people, that in hell you will be burned for eternity into fire, the white people will enjoy. They will get really sunburned. But nobody is going to change his attitude. Jews will keep on thinking they are the chosen people of God. After 4,000 years of constant misery, they still continue to think that they are the chosen people of God. 4,000 years have not convinced you. The Nordic Germans go on believing they are the chosen people of God. The Second World War has not proved anything to you. The intelligent young people have understood. My sannyasins, the first, the greatest number is of Germans. The second is of Japanese. The third is Italians. These were the three countries, together with Adolf Hitler, it is not a coincidence, it is simply intelligence. They have understood that they are living in a mad society, it is better to get out of it. Find some place where no such stupid ideas are maintained. Their coming to me is coming to a saner place where no distinctions are maintained. Nobody is superior, nobody is inferior. Races will not drop their ideas. Armies will not be ready to disperse. Religions will not drop their hold on millions of people. I have given the telegram to Mr. Rajiv Gandhi. Let us see what he can do. He will come against all the powers which he has never thought that they will oppose him. Right now they are with him, but if you start dispersing armies, throwing your armaments, and I don't think he himself has said that consciously. Because on the one hand he is making India a nuclear country. India is already producing nuclear weapons. And on the other hand he is talking about disarmament, denationalization. He is not seeing the contradiction. You are so poor and you are trying to be a member of the nuclear countries. It is such a costly affair for a poor country that for one nuclear missile, millions of Indians will have to die. At this cost, you can become the member of the club of those countries which have nuclear weapons. Right now, there are only 5 countries in the club. India will be the 6th. By the end of this century, there will be 25 countries having nuclear weapons. The whole energy is going to produce death. Such a love for death. And such a hate for life, that's why I say it is an insane world. You have to be aware, at least individually, you can drop all death orientation. And the only way to drop it is to love life. To love love, to love laughter, to rejoice, not in a paradise after death, but here now, before death destroys, you have to find the eternal in you. And that eternal can be found only by rejoicing people. Loving people, compassionate people, silent people. Not people who are against life, they can never find the source. It is such a simple arithmetic. If you are against life, as all the religions are, and all the militaries are, then how can you go deeper into life to find the source, the roots into the cosmos? I want you, particularly my people, have to be life affirmative against destruction. They have to be creative. in their small ways, maybe they create poetry, music, dance, maybe they create a small garden with flowers, and inside they have to find their Buddha. More people find the Buddha in their innermost being, the more secure is this beautiful planet, Earth. In this whole universe, there are only guesses by the scientists that there may be some planet somewhere which have life on them. But these are all guesswork. There is no valid evidence. In this vast universe, only this small Earth is full of life. The whole universe, in a way, is dead. Nothing green. No river has been found on any planet, on any star. No mountains. No thick forests. No birds fly in their sky. No cuckoos sing songs. No peacocks dance with their psychedelic colored feathers. There is no sign of any human beings anywhere in the whole universe. This is the glory of this small planet. It is a very small planet. But strangely, of a tremendous glory and splendor. It is a miracle. In this whole universe, only this Earth has greenery. Only this Earth has humanity. Only this Earth has the possibility for human beings to rise to the ultimate peak of being Buddhas. This is our only security. Otherwise, religions, armies are going to destroy the only place where life exists, where consciousness has grown, where few people have touched the ultimate eternity, where few people have reached to the very center of existence and found the ultimate significance and meaning of life. It is not just a question of 5 billion people dying. It is a question the whole universe will become without life, without consciousness. It is a tremendous problem. You are responsible for such a great work. Your meditation is not only for you. It is creating a certain milieu around the earth to help people more creative, more life affirmative, more in tune with existence, more sane, and more in the present. The Sutra. In the days when Yaku-san was still actively instructing his disciples, Rikko, the governor of Hosu and also a great Confucian, went to visit Yaku-san, whom he greatly admired. It is very easy to admire a master from far away, looking into his sermons, it is very difficult to face a master. And particularly for a man who was a great Confucian scholar, he could not see the contradiction. Confucius is not a master. He knows nothing of meditation. He is just a moralist, a thinker who makes rules, regulations, how to behave in a more gentlemanly way. His concern is social convenience. He is not concerned at all with your spirituality. He is a materialist, a socialist. Rico, although he was a governor, could not see the contradiction that to admire Yaku-san, a Zen master, is very contradictory to the Confucian scholarship. But that's how people are living, in all kinds of contradictions. They don't have the eyes and the clarity to see that their life is a contradiction. That they say something, they believe something, they do something else. And they never see. Their confused life. They think beautiful thoughts, but their actions are ugly. Because their beautiful thoughts repress their ugly thoughts. Those ugly thoughts and desires find some way from the back door to assert themselves. You are all sitting on volcanoes, centuries old, ready to burst any moment. Just a small provocation is needed. Your morality is not even skin deep. Just a little scratch and comes out the gorilla, the chimpanzee, the ape. Your humanity is very thin. To understand the contradiction is to get beyond it. Rico must have been a very confused man. Intellectuals are bound to be. They live in the mind. And the mind has no power over their body. Just try some small experiment. Move your ear lobes. Try with your mind. Whatever you want to do, just move your ear lobes and you will find it is absolutely impossible. I have come across only one man. Who was a freak of nature. Because there are no nerves in the ear lobes. So you cannot move them. This young man was my class fellow. Now he is a doctor, but by a freak of nature, his ear lobes have some nervous system. He can manage any way you say. Just, you cannot believe the way you move your hand. Have you ever thought? Why cannot you move your earlobes? Mind has no control over the body. And the people who live in the mind start going far away from the wisdom of the body. They start making intellectual systems for life. And life does not believe in your intellect. It has its own built-in program. The intellect may be convinced that you should be celibate, but the body is not convinced. And intellect has no way to convince the body. There has never been a single man who was celibate, except the impotence. But the impotence is not celibate. Have you ever observed a simple phenomenon? No impotent person, and there are many, has contributed anything to the world, to its evolution. No impotent man has been a great painter, or a great dancer, or a great musician, or a great poet, or a great mystic. No impotent man has been a Buddha. The reason is simple. Our life energy is equal to our sex energy. They are not two things. The impotent man has no energy at all. How he can be creative? All creative people are over-sexual. Nobody says such truths to you. And I am bound to be condemned by the masses. Because I am saying every creative person is over-sexual. Has to be. Average human beings are average sexual. Their sexuality is finished by creating a dozen children. To create poetry, you need some extra energy than only the productive. To create a great dance, to be a great musician, a painter, a sculptor, you will need something extra. You will need something overflowing than the average man has. Average man is finished with the children. Then he lives his whole life like a spent cartridge. The mystics are the most sexual people in the world, the Buddhas, for the simple reason, unless you have too much energy overflowing, you cannot enter into the center of your being. It needs tremendous force. And it is the same energy, whatever name you give to it. The governor Rikko admired Yaku-san very much. It is very easy to admire from far away. Because then you are only hearing from people stories. You have never encountered a Zen master. The real encounter has a totally different effect. Because he admired, he went to see Yaku-san. Yaku-san was looking at a sutra when the attendant monk showed Rikko into the master's room. Yaku-san did not look up on the governor's arrival, but appeared absorbed in what he was reading. A master is always total in whatever he is doing. He may be chopping wood. It is said about Rinzai, the great master who brought Zen from China to Japan. He had a beautiful monastery, and just near the gate he was chopping wood. Winter was coming soon. He was getting ready for the winter. He was so absorbed in chopping wood, and a man entered the gate, and seeing a vast monastery, he wondered where he is going to find the master Rinzai. He has heard so much about him. Seeing one man chopping wood, he asked him, "Can you tell me where I can find Master Rinzai?" Rinzai looked at the man. For a moment there was silence, and then he just indicated by the finger that there, as far as I know, Rinzai lives in that hut. He was so absorbed, he forgot that he is Rinzai. The man went, then he had a second thought that, "My God, I am Rinzai, and the poor fellow has gone in search of me." So he ran from the back side, went into the hut, sat into the master's position. The man knocked, he said, "Come in." The man looked at him, he is the same man, is still perspiring. He said, "But where is Master Rinzai?" He said, "I am Master Rinzai." He said, "Don't deceive me. I had seen you just at the gate chopping wood." He said, "That's right. At that time, I was not Master Rinzai, but just a woodcutter. Totally a woodcutter. That's why I forgot. And I showed you the way. Then I remembered. And I had to run. You can see I am perspiring. I had to run from the backside and came quickly before you reach. Now I am master inside. What do you want? The man was very much puzzled. He could not believe what to save this man, whether he is just a woodcutter and pretending to be Rinzai, or he is Rinzai and was cutting wood. He said, I will come some other day. You have confused me completely. Rinzai said, I have not confused you. You have been always confused. I have brought it on the surface. Come some other time. But remember, I am doing all kinds of things. Sometimes I am carrying water from the well. Don't ask me, where is Master Rinzai? At that time, I am just a water carrier. A Zen master is basically total in his action. Nothing is left behind. So when Iyaku-san was reading the sutra, he was totally there. He did not even look who has entered. It was not that he was insulting or humiliating the governor. He had not even raised his eyes. He had no idea that the governor has entered. He went on contemplating the sutra, its significance, its implications. Iyaku-san did not look up on the governor's arrival, but appeared absorbed in what he was reading. After a few moments, Rikko, who had a hot temper, now what kind of Confucian? That's what I say, skin deep morality. A great Confucian scholar has learned all the manners and etiquette and morals and a man on a high post of governor but he forgot all. Just because Iyaku-san did not pay any attention to him for a few seconds, his hot temper came on the surface. Confusion cannot dissolve. No moralist can help you to dissolve anger. They only teach you to repress. Go on repressing greed, anger, jealousy, and they will all accumulate inside you and will become a strong force. Just a slight provocation. And Iyaku-san was not provocating consciously. He was simply reading his sutra. But even that, the governor felt, is insulting. I am no ordinary person, I am a governor, and he is just a beggar. Zen masters are beggars. A beggar? And he has not even looked at me. What to say about standing up and receiving me? With bowing down, he knows no manners. He is a wild type of man. He became very angry. He could not stand it anymore. He grumbled.
It is better to hear the name than to see your face, he said to the master, and stood up to leave. Immediately Yaku-san said, why do you respect the ear and look down on the eye? You have heard my name and you respected me. And now you have seen me, and you are angry and you are going in anger. Why you prefer the ear than the eye? A very significant question. And the eye gives you 80% of your experiences. And the remaining 4, only 20%. That means each sense other than the eye gives you only 5% of your total experience, while the eyes give you 80%. But people are very much believers of the ear. You believe any kind of rumor. You never bother to check. You believe any kind of lie. You never try that first I should understand whether there is any truth in it. Who wants to take that much care? People live in lies and they have only heard. They have not seen anything. Have you seen the God? And the whole world believes in it just because you have heard. And the people you have heard, have you asked them? Have you seen the God? They have also heard. You go on searching. You will never find a man who has seen God. You will find century after century, people have heard. Who has created the rumor? I have always loved a small story. A journalist by chance, by some mistake, after dying, reached at the pearly gates. Saint Peter opened his window and looked down and he asked, who are you? He said, I am a journalist. Open the door. He said, journalists, our quota is full. We had a quota for 12 journalists. That has been full from the very eternity. Because there is no news happening in paradise, everything is calm and quiet. All saints are sitting on their clouds, playing on their harps, singing Alleluia. What news? No stealing, no murder, no suicide, no rape, nothing. So only first issue of the newspaper had appeared. That was in the very beginning when God made the world. That was the only news. Since then, those 12 journalists are just sitting uselessly. So please, you go to the other door in front. He looked at the other door, he said, that is the hell. I don't want to go to hell, I want to first inspect heaven. Saint Peter felt pity for the man. He said, I will do one thing. I will give you 24 hours. You go in. If you can convince any journalist amongst the 12 to go to hell, then you can remain here, he can go to the hell. Our quota will remain 12. If you cannot convince anybody, then after a day, you will have to go. He said, that's enough. 24 hours, that's enough. He went in and he started talking to everybody who met him, that in the hell, they have brought the latest machinery for publication. A new great newspaper is going to be published. They are in need of journalists, editors, sub-editors. He talked to the saints. They didn't care much. But the journalists became alert. They said, really? He went on around heaven, and after 24 hours, he went to see whether anybody has left or he has to go. Seeing him coming, Saint Peter locked the door. Saint Peter said, you cannot go. All the 12 has gone. You convince them. He said, my God, all the 12, then I want to go. Saint Peter said, you created the rumor. He said, that's true, that I created the rumor, but if 12 journalists had believed it, who knows? The rumor may be true. Just open the door. I'm getting suffocated. And anyway, 24 hours in heaven is more than enough. Nothing is happening here. All rotten saints, and just doing only one thing, sitting on their small clouds, floating, and playing on their harp, alleluia. Now I don't want to do this. You just open the door. Anyway, I am not supposed to be in heaven. Saint Peter said, it is up to you, because we don't need journalists. You can go, but don't come back. He said, who is going to come back? The rumor must have some truth in it. Saint Peter laughed that I have never seen such an idiot. You created the rumor and you say now that it must have some. He said, yes, My whole life I have been doing it. What is the purpose of a journalist? To create rumors. But I have never been so convincing. That means the rumor has some truth in it. I am convinced myself because those 12 are convinced. And they were all ancient, experienced journalists. If they have left, I am going. People believe whatever they hear. Every Buddhist scripture, because it was not written by Buddha, it was not written while he was alive, it was written when he died. Then a great meeting of all the enlightened disciples, 500 in all, reported whatever they have experienced with Buddha. But everybody reported that I have heard Buddha saying such and such a thing. Every scripture of Buddha begins with I have heard. Because those people were authentically true. They have heard Buddha, but to hear is one thing and to experience is another. That was their honesty, sincerity. Yaku-san said, it is better to hear the name you said, Governor, then to see the face? Why do you respect the ear and look down on the eye? What he is saying, if you had seen me totally absorbed in my work, utterly, nobody was left behind, only the sutra, resounding in the nothingness of my being. If you had silently watched and witnessed, you would have got something immeasurably valuable. But you were so full of opinion, which you have heard, that your eyes were blind, you could not see. Your ears overpowered your eyes. If you had seen me in that position of absolute meditation, I was not, only the sutra was. In my utter silence and absence, the sutra was resounding, just like a bell ringing. The sounds disappearing into silence. If you had just witnessed, putting all your opinions and admiration aside, because that is only heard, that is not your experience. And a chance, a great chance you missed. You have never seen a man so absorbed that he does not look even at the governor. There is a beautiful temple in Maharashtra. In Maharashtra, Krishna's name is Vitthal. There is a story behind the name. Vitthal means sit down. There was a great lover of Krishna. He had almost become absolutely absent as far as he was concerned. He has opened all his doors for Krishna to come in. Krishna for him was the name of the cosmos. There is no problem. You can call the cosmos by any name. Just don't get misunderstood. By naming it Krishna, you may start thinking it has a personality, that it is an individual. But the man was not at all confused about it. His name for cosmos was Krishna. His old mother was almost dying and he was massaging her feet. It was a cold night and the story is beautiful. Now it becomes a parable. Up to now it may have been factual. Seeing that his devotee is serving his mother so totally, he has forgotten to eat, to drink. Krishna came. To help, he stood behind. But the man was so absorbed in massaging the feet of the mother, he did not look back, although he heard somebody has come. The footsteps. Krishna has to declare himself that I have come to help you. He said, I am enough to serve my mother. But he did not look at Krishna. There was a brick lying by his side. He just threw the brick back without looking and said to Krishna, sit down on the brick till I am finished. Because he told him, sit down on the brick. In Maharashtra, Krishna is called Vitthal. Vitthal means sit down. And they have a beautiful temple in which a brick is preserved and Krishna is sitting on the brick. I am not concerned with the mythology. I am concerned about the man's total absorption, his absolute immersion in the act he was doing. Even if God comes, he says, sit down, you will have to wait. He did not look backwards. What to say about a governor? Even God cannot create a disturbance in a meditator. I have loved the story, although it seems to be mythological, because there is no Krishna to come. It is all imagination. But my concern is not Krishna, my concern is the man who was so much deeply involved in serving his dead mother, who was almost dead. In the mornings he was dead. He was still massaging her feet when he found that she is dead. Yakusan is saying, you should trust your eye more. Than your ears. You should put aside all opinions, prejudices, and clean your eyes. Let them be mirrors to reflect the reality. Rico pressed his hands together and bowed down. He saw the point. He was an intelligent man, of course. Not a meditative person, but he could see the point that he has missed and he has misbehaved. Coming to the Zen master and getting hot-tempered and angry, was not the right manner, even according to Confucius, in whom he has believed. Rico pressed his hands together and bowed down. He then asked, could you please tell me what Tao is? Tao is the Chinese word for truth, for existence, for Dhamma, for Buddha, the ultimate reality that cannot be translated into words. Tao is a beautiful symbol. It does not mean anything. It simply indicates. It is an arrow on a milestone. It says, go on. You are on the right path. Don't stop unless you reach to the very end. He asks, what is Tao? Yakusan immediately pointed up and then down, up and then down with his hand and asked, do you understand? With his hand, he has shown everything, the highest ultimate peak of consciousness and the deepest depth of consciousness. The whole span of consciousness from the depth, abysmal depth to the ultimate height with ends nowhere. It simply goes on and on and on. He has shown the vertical process. You have to understand it. We move in time
horizontal. The young man becomes old, the child becomes young, the old becomes dead. From cradle to the grave, we move in a horizontal line. Time is horizontal. Truth is vertical. Meditation is vertical. It does not move horizontally, it moves vertically. You have seen the cross of Jesus. But Christians don't understand the meaning of the cross. The cross shows both the lines, the vertical line, the hands of Jesus. The horizontal line, the hands of Jesus. And the vertical line, his head, up to his feet. There is a crossing point where the vertical crosses the horizontal. That point you find in meditation, that I have been calling your center. Once you have found that point, you know a door opens upwards and a door opens downwards. For the first time, your vision becomes vertical. Time ceases. You start moving into timeless eternity. Mind ceases because thinking is horizontal. You start moving into no mind. Unfortunately, Christians missed completely the meaning of the cross. Even the Pope just hangs a golden cross in his neck. Not even seeing the utter stupidity of it. Jesus was not hanged on a golden cross. And he was not hanging the cross in his neck. He was hanged on the cross. If the Pope wants to be really the representative, then the only way is help him to be hanged on a wooden cross. Then only he will be a representative. Golden cross. And so small. And such a big pollock. They have not understood the significance of the cross. It shows two lines in existence. One line is of time and mind, and one line is no time, no mind. And that is your truth. When you start moving vertically, Yakusan immediately pointed up and then down with his hand and asked, "Do you understand?" Rikko said, "I don't understand." Yakusan shouted,
Clouds are in the sky. Water is in the well. What does he mean? He says everything is in its place. What is there to understand or not to understand? Everything is in its place. The clouds are in the sky and water is in the well. Nothing is wrong anywhere. The Buddha is in its place. You may be aware or not, that is another point. But he has not moved even for a single moment, for a morning walk out of you. Tao means everything is exactly where it should be. Nothing has to be improved. Nothing has to be changed. Everything has to be allowed as it is. Relaxed, at rest, and the whole existence becomes a celebration. Rico suddenly realized and felt great joy. The moment he heard Yaku-san shouting, clouds are in the sky, water in the well, he understood the symbolic message, nothing has to be done, just watch. Clouds are in the sky and the water is in the well. Be a witness. No effort is needed to become a Buddha. No effort is needed to realize Tao. Just to witness. Everything is in its place. Nothing has ever gone wrong. This is a very strange but very grand approach to reality. Rico suddenly realized and felt great joy, and with his contentment he bowed down to Yaku-san and presented this poem to him. Achieved form, it looks like a form of the crane. Under the thousands of pine trees, the way of the two poles, I come and ask Tao, no wasteful argument. Clouds are in the sky, water is in the well. Very beautifully he says, I come and ask Tao. He is saying, I have not asked about Tao, now I understand. I have asked Tao himself. Yaku-san is Tao. Is in this moment just a pure witness. Utterly at rest. I come and ask Tao. No wasteful argument. And from the Master, no argument, no effort to convince me. Just simple indication of a vertical existence from up to the very abysmal depth, and the whole existence is yours. No wasteful argument. He simply says, clouds are in the sky, water is in the well, and everything is understood. He touched the feet of the Master in deep gratitude. Baso wrote, a quick lightning flash, traveling through the blackness, the night heron calls. The night heron calls, a quick lightning flash, traveling through the darkness. That's how it happened to Rikku. Yaku-san managed a quick lightning flash, passing through all darkness, like the night heron calls. And then there is utter silence of deep gratitude. A question from Manisa. Is the point of the questions to find as many different windows through which we might view and finally really comprehend what you are saying? Or is there more you have not yet said and the questions are our drawing you out on those areas which you have not yet disclosed? Manisa, both things are true. I want you to look from every window possible. One never knows from which window you will see the light, from which window you will see the moon. I don't want to leave any angle, any dimension. Your questions bring new dimensions. So the first thing is absolutely right, and the second thing is also absolutely right. I have 500 books, but what I wanted to say, I have not said yet. I am trying hard. Hoping that in some way, in some moment, whether I say it or not, you will hear it. Perhaps I may not be able to say it, but I may be able to show it. You may not hear it, you may see it. I am reminded of one of the great Indian poets, Rabindranath Tagore. He was a Nobel Prize winner. He has written 6,000 songs, which can be sung and put to music. They are not just poetries to recite. They are composed according to musical instruments. In English language, only Shelley comes a little close to Rabindranath Tagore. He has 2,000 songs which can be put to music. But Rabindranath is far away. 6,000 songs. And when he was dying, one of his friends and his uncle, also a great painter, just as Rabindranath was a great poet. His name was Avanindranath Tagore. In this century in India, nobody has surpassed Avanindranath Tagore as far as paintings are concerned. He was sitting by his side. They were almost of the same age. Rabindranath was dying. Both were old. Avanindranath said to Rabindranath, "I see tears in your eyes. You should rejoice. You are leaving 6,000 songs behind you. There is no single poet in any language who can be compared to you. You can die with dignity and pride. Withdraw your tears." Rabindranath said, "These tears are not what you think. They are not of despair. They are not of fear. They are not because death is coming. The reason is I have sung 6,000 songs, but the song that I have come to sing, I have failed. That song I sing again and again and again, but something else comes out. That song remains deep hidden in my soul. I am crying because I was coming very close. This is not the moment for me to die. God is absolutely unjust with me. Whole life of rehearsal, all those songs are just rehearsals, rejections. The song that I wanted to sing still remains unsung. But that is not going to be the case with me. I will sing the song. I will try from every angle to approach you, from every possible dimension, in every possible way and device. Because my song is not of words. My song is me. I want to share my whole being with you. Hence the questions. It is time for Sardar Gurdayal Singh, Ronald Reagan picks himself up off the street outside the exclusive big deal restaurant. "I guess I don't have anything to complain about," says Reagan as he dusts himself off. "They treated me all right." "What do you mean? Treated you all right? ask Ronald Reagan's private secretary, straightening Reagan out. They threw you out, did they not? Yes, they did, replies Reagan. They threw me out through the kitchen into the street. Then I told the manager that I used to be the president of America. So he picked me up gently, brushed me off, and escorted me back into the restaurant. Then he threw me out of the front door. Timid Teddy Tuber is tired of being a wimp. So he goes to see Dr. Feelgood, the famous psychiatrist. As I see it, recommends Feelgood, you need to be more firm, more tough at home. Just show your wife, Big Bertha, that you are a man and not a mouse. Great idea, replies timid Teddy. And that evening he goes home feeling like a real man. He walks in the door and sees Big Bertha carrying the couch upstairs by herself. Listen here, commands timid Teddy, just put down that couch, and from now on you are taking orders from me. First I want my slippers, my newspaper, and my pipe delivered to me in my easy chair. Big Bertha looks at Teddy in disbelief as she slowly puts down the couch. Then after you prepare supper, Teddy continues, just go up and lay out my evening clothes. I am going out alone tonight with the boys. And do you know who is going to dress me in my best tuxedo and black tie? Sure, I know, says Big Bertha, smiling, the undertaker. Humphrey Hogbreath wakes up slowly after undergoing a serious brain operation. He is just conscious enough to feel the softness, the comfortable bed, and the warmth of gentle hands on his forehead. Ah, Grace Humphrey, where am I? In heaven? No, dear, replies Hilda, his wife, I am still right here with you. Nivedana. Close your eyes.
and feel your body to be completely frozen. This is the right moment. You can look inwards. Gather your total energy, your whole consciousness, and with an urgency, as if this is going to be your last moment on the earth, go rushing towards the center of your being. Faster and faster as you come closer to your inner center. You are coming closer to the cosmos. You are coming closer to yourself. You are coming closer to your inner splendor, the Buddha. Centered in your being, you are no more the personality you have believed always. Centered in yourself, for the first time you are a Buddha, your real and authentic being. The only quality that Buddha has, you have to remember, that quality is witnessing. Just witness. The body is not you. The mind is not you. The astral body is not you. The subtle body is not you. You are only a witness. Silence descends, deep peace arises in you, a great ecstasy surrounds you. Just witness. At this moment, you are the most blessed people on the earth. 10,000 Buddhas ready to melt into each other. Nivedana, relax, but keep witnessing. Everything that may be happening inside you, just watch. Slowly, slowly, you are melting. Your separations are disappearing. Gautam, the Buddha auditorium has become an ocean of pure consciousness without any ripples. This is the moment to persuade the Buddha to come with you. Collect the grandeur of this moment, the beauty, the truth, all the flowers of the mysterious existence which are available at the center of your being. All the fragrances of the beyond. This is the vertical moment. You are no more in time.
You are no more in mind. You are in eternity, timelessness. You are beyond mind, just a pure silence, witnessing your original face. Before Nivedana calls you back, persuade the Buddha. He has been hiding in your center for centuries. He has to be brought from the center to your ordinary day-to-day life. He has to become your song, your dance. He has to become your activities, your words, your gestures, your silences. The day only he remains and you disappear will be the greatest day of your life. After that, the whole existence is yours, with all its mysteries. After that, you will be never born into a body, into a prison, into the cycle of birth and death. You will spread all over the cosmos. You will become one with the whole. Nivedana, come back. But come as a Buddha, silently, peacefully, with great grace. Just sit down for a few moments to recollect, to remember the golden path that you have traveled. Watch, the Buddha is coming every day closer and closer. He is becoming a reality in your life, not just an idea. This I call straight to the point of enlightenment.